Hi, and welcome to Behind the Curtain with me, your host, Kate Clegg. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Andy Roberts. Andy and I first met when he was associate in our Kendall office and was, in fact, the person who hired me. His own journey with curtains began in Leeds back in 2011, though, before he took the opportunity to lead a team of five in Kendall. Since then, he has helped grow our Cumbrian office from strength to strength up to a team of 17. Today, Andy is board director for our Atlantic Hub, which includes our offices in Edinburgh, Glasgow, Douglas, Dublin, and of course, Kendall, which he continues to oversee. Andy is one of our most versatile and value-driven leaders. Underpinned by undeniable technical excellence, Andy is part of our experience community and key sector groups, which we're going to talk a bit about today. He's also a voice on both sustainable and MMC design and an advocate for equity, diversity, and inclusion. We'll be catching up on the board's priority project on gender balance. Andy, welcome to Behind the Curtain. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Kate.
Let's go back then to your career journey. So can you tell us what are your kind of key milestones to date? What's memorable for you?
Well, I suppose going back to the very start of my career, I went to university in Manchester and worked for BDP out of university in Manchester. Then moved over to Leeds and had 5 years with White and Green, a little stint in London. And then I joined Curtins in 2011 in the Leeds office. I was in Leeds for 2 years and then moved to Kendall in 2013. And I've been there ever since. I'd like to talk for a minute about how Kate ended up joining Curtins. So I'd been in the Kendall office for probably not that long, maybe a few months. And the branch secretary, as that role was called at the time, left, went to do something else. And so I had to bring in a new branch secretary. So I interviewed a lot of people, actually. And Kate was one of them.
Yes, but it wasn't successful, was I?
Not the first time, no. So it wasn't a great start, actually. So I remember when I first joined, there was four other people in the Kendall office. Two of them went to the pub for a pint or two every day at lunchtime.
And the pub that I was working.
So this was the Wetherspoons in Kendall. And they came back from Wetherspoons after their pint or two at lunch one day and said, oh, there's like a great person working behind the bar. You should interview them for the branch secretary role. And I was like, okay, I'll interview them. And so Kate came into interview and did really well and was, I think with the story that I've always told is that Kate was a close second.
I was very green, wasn't I? Like my my level of experience there was very low. Like I was pretty fresh out of university and I'd picked up some volunteering opportunities. And so I was kind of doing a bit of background in marketing and in volunteering there. But I think it was fair that you didn't pick me initially for that job. But I suppose I've always seen that as a bit of a demonstration of a bit of tenacity to come back and try again for that role, which I believe Rob, I'm not saying that I'm akin to Rob Melling at all, our former CEO, but there was something, he wasn't successful the first time round when he applied for Curtin. So there is something about just persevering a little bit, being resilient. But you know, that was the start of something really exciting, and progression happened quickly from that point on.
Yeah, my instincts were obviously off first time around because you were back in probably 6 months later and doing that role, which you did for quite a few years, and office obviously doing marketing.
And so it took me away from Curtins for a little while in the pursuit of working in marketing, and at that time what I thought was a passion, which was the kind of the art sector. And I remember standing in the kitchen with you and being so torn about feeling that real sense of belonging, and you'd been so supportive and taking me from branch secretary into the work winning business development team, but just feeling that I had to make a go of working in marketing. But it's brought me back with a kind of different experience, different perspective, really.
Well, it's an interesting learning point. I look back on that as well. And I think what you have to accept as a manager is that sometimes people kind of grow and move on. Mm-hmm. And the first few times it happens, it's pretty difficult.
Yeah.
And it's something that you kind of get used to and accept that people take different paths. And I've always been pretty lucky, actually, in recruitment that I've tended to recruit good people and they've tended to stay a little while. And that, I think we've been particularly lucky in Kendall because it can be quite challenging to recruit in that market. Yeah. And we've managed to find good people, and you know, not everybody stays forever, but people come back as well, and that's nice. And we've had one or two people actually in Kendall who've left and come back. So
that's
quite nice.
And people
as well
that have moved offices. You came from Leeds. We've also got Andy Brooks, who's over from
Yeah, Andy also moved
well.
over from Leeds. Yeah.
And is now a thriving member of our employee forum as well.
Yeah, and we've got Keith Trail, who was in Kendal and now still sits in Kendal, but works in transport planning for Liverpool. So yeah, we've got a few people who've moved back and forth.
Yeah, a really diverse team of perspective. People brought learnings from all around the country, which is excellent. You've been in lots of different places across the UK. And I suppose when you landed in Kendal, were there any kind of pre-misconceptions that you had about that office that have changed since you've grown it?
Well, when I moved to Kendal, people definitely said things like, you're retiring to the Lake District, you're going to work on house extensions, that sort of thing. And to be honest, that was the kind of work that our Kendal office was doing at that time. So this was, you know, 13 years ago. And a lot of the work was domestic work. And it was quite different from how the rest of the business was operating, and not necessarily the kind of work that I wanted to do. So it wasn't a misconception at the time, but over the past decade or so, we've really changed the balance of the work that we're doing. So we still do some small projects, but we're much more aligned with the rest of the business in terms of the work we're doing. So schools and hospitals, public sector offices. And a big kind of milestone project for us in Kendal was the Cumbria County Council head offices, which we did in 2014, I think.
I remember those, yeah.
So the
cooling flooring, which felt really innovative at the time, the concrete flooring.
So that felt like a big milestone for us in terms of winning that project and delivering it and kind of getting ourselves on the map in Cumbria. And from that point, I feel like we've won the majority of the big projects in the public sector, at least in Cumbria.
It has been quite transformational. And Pete Thomas talked about this recently. He wrote a blog around kind of the skills challenges that we have in the Cumbrian office and reflecting on similar challenges, but also underlining that there is such opportunity in that office and in that region, and really early opportunity for engineers to get involved in projects, big projects, you know, working on the Westmorland Hospital and the Carlisle Citadels projects, really transformational for the region, and curtains are right there at the forefront, aren't they?
That's right. I mean, if you look at the balance of projects in the office now, we've got, I say, some of the smaller schemes, but then projects of sort of 50 to 100 million, relatively common now. There's always a scheme of that magnitude in the Kendal office, which just wasn't the case sort of 10, 15 years ago.
I suppose you've stepped away a little bit from that office with leadership now over with Pete Thomas, who's absolutely flying in that role, and you're taking more of a step towards the Atlantic Hub in your board director role. What learnings are you taking from the Kendal growth to other regions?
Well, if you look at the growth of Kendal, we grew from 5 to 17, and reflecting on what I've learned, it is really hard to run a small business unit. You don't have the kind of infrastructure and the team and the critical mass to, do one role as an office lead. You do a bit of everything.
Yeah.
And what that means is that you learn a lot, you keep your hand in, and you're kind of involved in absolutely everything in that business unit. And so it's been quite a transition over the past few years to step away and have more of an oversight role over five business units. There was a time in Kendal where I knew what absolutely everything that was happening on every project and with every client. And so taking that slight step away has been an adjustment. And what's made that easier is having people in those business units that you can trust.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Pete and Kendal. You know, I trust him to kind of, you know, steer the ship there.
Yeah.
And I know it's in good hands, which then allows me to focus on other areas and give support elsewhere.
I'm really enjoying this trip down memory lane that we're having, and thinking about the projects that we delivered in Kendal takes me back to when we were doing some of the Northeast Priority Schools batch, and they were for our Leeds office for Galliford Try, which I suppose was an example of us working together, cross-office working, which we've always done as a business. We've always tried to share resource, which has been really beneficial to our clients and also for exposure for our people onto different sizes of schemes elsewhere in the country. So thinking about kind of the school sector, you're still part of that key sector group for Curtains, key sector lead. How has the school sector evolved over the last 10 years?
It's pretty exciting at the moment. So the DfE have just released a new framework. It's called CF25. So it's Contractor Framework 25, which is, and it's a 6-year framework. There's supposed to be £15 billion worth of schools released over the past over the next 6 years. They're going to be all over England, and there's going to be a lot of opportunity for schools in every office in England. The way it works in Scotland, Ireland and Wales is slightly different, but the opportunity is still there as well. So there's going to be a lot coming forward, and I've been spending a lot of time recently trying to align with contractors so that those opportunities come to Curtins, and I think we'll get more than our fair share of schools nationwide.
It's always been the kind of bedrock of our delivery, really, schools. I think some of the first big projects that we ever did from our Liverpool project office were 50 schools for the Liverpool City region post-war. So it's always been the bedrock, and it's brilliant to see that we're bringing all that experience nowadays forward. And the education sector in itself is evolving at a rapid pace at the moment with the skills reform that's coming in, which Curtins are looking at in terms of bringing young people into the business, which again has been something that we've always really been part of. So it's great to see we're so closely aligned with schools on a continual basis.
Well, you mentioned those Northeast schools. That would have been 2015, would it?
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Yeah, so that was 12 schools in the Northeast that were delivered with Galliford Try. It was led out of Birmingham, actually. So it was Andy Mack and Louise Williams, who's back with us now, who led those. And that worked really well as a kind of cross-office work-sharing exercise where those schools delivered out of Leeds, Kendal, Birmingham, and I think Liverpool as well.
Possibly, yes.
And Louise and Andy were the people fronting the meetings and we were delivering in the background, and it worked really well. There was accountability. Yeah. There were good schemes for us. And I think we want to make sure that we, I suppose, get back to doing that as well as we did then.
Yeah,
We know we can do it. We've done it for a decade or more.
We have. And I suppose that's a really key priority for the business at the moment, is that collective working together and knowledge share, which brings me on to a bit about our experience community, which is really about sharing best practice across this business, across Curtins. And you were on one of the panels at our leadership lab on QMS and project management. And there's recordings of that on loop if anybody wants to catch up. But you're also on our conservation heritage group. And I wondered if you could just bring us up to speed on how's that shaping up?
Yeah, the first exercise that Andy Mack and I did together was the fee calculator, which we think is pretty exciting, but probably isn't podcast worthy. But conservation and heritage is something that interests a lot of people, including me. We've got a really good group for the CNH experience community, so led by Stephen Beggs, who's recently become care accredited, and they're doing some really interesting stuff. That group's been kind of live and really led strongly by Suzanne Johnson before she went on her SPAB scholarship. And Stephen's going to kind of pick up the mantle and drive that forward. And it's something that people are interested in. The projects always look great. We've got some excellent conservation projects in the business at the moment. Yeah. The Slate Museum at Clanberris being one of them.
Yeah. I mean, conservation heritage is such an important service. I know that it requires very specialist engineering techniques, but just in terms of retaining the heritage of our cities, we're here in a refurbished building in Blackfriars House in Manchester, which harks back to, you know, the Victorian era and the Industrial Revolution in Manchester. And there's so much storytelling that can continue when you properly conserve and allow these amazing buildings to continue. And it's great to see that Curtins continues to have such an important part of that. You know, we did it with the Albert Dock and we continue to do now.
Well, there's lots of really good reasons to preserve buildings. Yeah. There's the kind of economics of it, of you know, why build a new building when we've got a great one that already exists.
Yeah.
There's obviously the carbon aspects. So retrofit of a new building, massive carbon benefits, which is really playing into that conservation kind of narrative, because 10, 15 years ago, people wanted to retain and restore buildings because they liked them and they liked the history, but there wasn't kind of an economic imperative to do it. Whereas now, particularly with the kind of carbon agenda and trying to reduce embodied carbon in construction, we have to do it. And I think there's a real kind of impetus behind retrofit. We see it everywhere, don't we?
Yeah.
And I think that the kind of balance of our work will continue to shift towards retrofit. A big part of that being listed in historic buildings.
Yes, but it's not only listed in historic buildings, is it? I mean, one of the things that we're looking at the moment is just the reuse and maintenance of any existing building, whether it's a whole asset stock of them or whether it's one individual building. We used to do a lot of surveys, I don't know if you remember, of bingo halls and casinos.
Yeah, the Mecca bingo survey.
Yeah, so that was, I used to go out on the job with some of the technicians to take the notes on those, so that's why I remember them. And that is sort of what we're offering now with our Insight service, which is much more refined now, it's much more consistent, really helps our teams deliver to a consistent standard across the business. So Insights, what's kind of changed with the way that we're surveying now?
We're much more consistent and methodical, I suppose, in the way that we survey buildings. In the past, those bingo surveys, we did a good job, but I'm not sure we made huge amounts of money out of it. I think partly because we weren't consistent in our approach. And it also probably didn't give as good a product as we'd give a client now. So the Insight program is really kind of refined, streamlined, and set up a process for us to follow so we can survey buildings properly, recognizing there is a different skill set slightly and a different mindset in working with existing buildings versus new build.
Yeah.
So we're trying to recognize those skills, recognize a slightly different process, but make it as kind of streamlined as possible.
And of course, there has been a shift as well with the Building Safety Act, and Insight is picking up on kind of that golden thread of information right from the start and really understanding the kind of building structure and what we need for the building safety case, I understand.
Yes, well, it's challenges with the building safety case. So if we're building taller buildings, high-risk buildings, then it's quite a challenge in the industry in the moment in getting those projects through the right approvals.
Yeah.
There's also opportunity in that there's the onus on existing building owners to make sure their buildings are safe, essentially. Yeah. And that's where there's opportunity for us to help them with that as well.
So we've talked a lot about kind of our services and offerings, Andy, but I would really like to bring us on to one of the priority projects that you're working with the board on, which is around gender balance, which is really significant and I hope to see it being quite transformational over the kind of coming years. Can you explain a little bit about what this has been looking like from your perspective?
Yes, this was a new thing for me to look at in detail this year. It's always something that I've been interested in. And I suppose I've been guided quite a lot by my wife, Catherine, who works, she's a GP, but she's a senior partner in a business, runs a business. Her two business partners are women as well. And I think she's brilliant in that role. And I would like to see more women in leadership roles within Curtins.
Yeah.
So part of what I've been doing over the last 6 months is to try and understand why that isn't the case.
Yeah.
And there's lots of challenges with the industry. So, you know, it's not comparable between medicine and engineering in some respects because we are a male-dominated industry in construction. But we should have more women progressing from junior roles into more senior roles, and we're just not really seeing it. So I've travelled around a few offices and spoken to a number of people to just try and understand.
Yeah. You
know, some of the reasons and challenges. And it's been really eye-opening, really interesting, lots of things that I just haven't had to consider in my career in terms of challenge. So it's something that remains a big focus for us as a business.
Yeah, and I think we're ready to sort of take the next steps with those findings and that feedback, really. And I suppose a key thing that's come out of it is the need for role models to move female leaders from technical roles into senior technical roles particularly. And thinking back, so a couple of years ago, we launched our Success for All mentoring program, which was open to anybody in the business to put themselves forward if they consider themselves to be a minority, to access a bit more coaching and mentoring and help us remove some of the barriers, some of the work that you've been doing when you've been going out to the offices, actually, and just getting feedback from individuals. And what we found with that was that although it was open to anyone that considered themselves to be a minority, it was only women that put themselves forward. And we found as well that we didn't quite have enough role models in senior leadership to support them in a really structured and proactive way. So we're taking that forward now, aren't we, with our women's network?
Yeah, one of the things that I found out with speaking to people is that people really value mentors.
Yeah.
And mentors have kind of had the same lived experience that they have. So you know, we're saying we want more technical women within the business. Well, I'm a technical person, but you know, I can't necessarily share the same lived experience that other people can. So we're looking for people kind of in the construction industry or adjacent to the industry, I suppose, outside of curtains, yes, to be mentors for women within our business. So we're putting forward the Women's Network, essentially, which is a mentoring program for women within our business. And we've got some really interesting mentors from in the industry and slightly beyond.
Yeah, I mean, it's the caliber of the mentors that put themselves forward is quite unbelievable, really. And the appetite for it as well. I mean, it wasn't long before we had quite a big list of mentors that had come forward that I would absolutely love to be part of this program. So what we'll be offering is a number of one-on-one coaching sessions for mentors and mentees, usually online, but over a series of months. And these will reflect on some of the successes that we have in our reverse mentoring program, in that we have themes and topics for sessions to really help guide those, so that coaching can be really valuable.
Yeah, we've had really good response from the industry. So contacts that we have, so for me, it's architects and contractors mainly, had really good response. And we've got such a strong response that we're going to be able to have most of the regions covered, which means that that kind of one-on-one face-to-face mentoring is going to be possible as well, which hopefully will be really helpful for people, because we're talking about women in really senior positions within other businesses, so they can share, I suppose, their experiences of how they've progressed, because it'll be different, I suppose, to how I've progressed.
And I think having difference of perspective is really key to this, because I think when you have perhaps mentors from within your business, you are somehow you've just got the confines of that business offering in terms of the barriers that we might have in place. But if you can bring people in from outside of the business, they don't have any of that. They're not thinking it within kind of the curtains remit in terms of how we move women forward through this business. So I feel that this is really quite transformational, and we have support as well from the Purpose Coalition. So Justine Greening will be one of the mentors. Paula Sheriff has also said that she'll support it, which is, I mean, to have an hour of these individuals' time, even let alone several, and the caliber of all of the women that will be joining Paula and Justine are, you know, our kin, which is wonderful and a really, really exciting step for everybody. All right, Andy, I'm going to bring us on to our quick fire round. So these questions, I don't want you to think too much about it.
Okay.
let's start off with, what are some of your favorite things to do?
So everyone who knows me will know that I like riding bikes.
Yeah.
I ride bikes a lot. It's not massively exciting. I'm not going to start talking about it in detail. You were asking me before we started recording about my favorite bike and that sort of thing. But
yeah. And you could, I mean, we wouldn't have enough time in the day to really cover that.
No, exactly. So I've also got a camper van, and go camping with the family a lot. So I've got two kids, and so we were in the lakes camping last weekend, paddleboarding, mountain biking.
Just as much family time as possible outdoors.
Yeah, some family time and then some of my own time out on the bike as well at the weekend.
Yeah, excellent. You're quite a goal-orientated individual. I hope I've kind of encapsulated you. You're right there. So what would you say motivates you?
I'm fairly competitive.
And
so I don't expect to be the best at everything all the time, but I do like to be the best that I can be. So I suppose away from work, I race bikes, and I set myself goals, and it's usually not to win, because, you know, you've got to be realistic, but I'll set myself a goal of a certain time or a certain placing, and then I think you have to be goal orientated as a business unit leader. Making money is, I suppose, the crux of what we want to do. And I've always taken quite a bit of pride in making a profit in individual business units.
We really see that. And I think there's a lot that we can take from that idea that you just set mini goals, that you don't always have to be the best. But sometimes there's a target that you can get to that's just a little bit better than you were yesterday. And I think a lot of us can take something from that. What would you chalk up as your greatest achievement then?
I suppose it has to be the growth of the Kendall office.
Yeah.
You know, looking back and that growth from 5 to 17 people and the turnovers 4 times what it was then, and I mean, I think I've had quite a lot of luck and quite a lot of support and been quite fortunate with some of the recruitment choices and things, because you can't do those things on your own.
No.
But I am, you know, proud of that.
Yeah, and so you should be. And I think also proud that you've been able to take that step away now into your board role and see that office continue to thrive, because there's so much legacy there.
Yeah, and it's, in some ways, I'm sure it's challenging for Pete, because it's something that I did his role for 10 years and he's, you know, making it his own and making it a success. And he does a lot of things really well that weren't necessarily my strengths. And I see that. And I think Kendall's in safe hands going forward.
It certainly is. Right, our final question. So we ask this to all the guests that join us on Behind the Curtain. Imagine Andy Roberts a year from today, so that's kind of summer 2027. What will you be doing?
Hopefully I'll have come back from another weekend away in the van. I'll probably have a bike race in the calendar.
Yeah.
And of the five business units that I look after, I'd like all of them to be in profit.
Wow, those sound like brilliant targets to have for the year ahead. Andy, thank you so much for joining us on Behind the Curtain. It's been really lovely to take a trip down memory lane in some places, but also look forward to the future. So thank you very much for joining.
Thank you, Kate.